another exciting episode of Pretentious Internet Theater, the show that is the best use of the hour you gained back due to daylight savings, and if you live in Arizona or certain counties of Indiana, then bully for you. I am your host, Andrew Cook. Before we get started, I'd like to start off with a bit of controversy. Fallen Druid himself of Xander's Terribly Bad Halloween had contacted me and stated that in Chapter 2 I had made this statement, apparently Motoko is a smoker instead of Makoto, and you can understand how I could confuse the two. So I thought perhaps that I had somehow compromised the artistic integrity of the story. I had gotten some help, and first I went to the diabolical Dr. Avalanche, whose autonomous residence is located 30 miles beneath the Earth's crust. When I went down into his evil sanctum, he had told me that none of the Sailor Senshi were indeed smokers. Contemplating this further, when I spoke to someone who represented a PR regimen for Murder World, who had informed me that originally Makoto was supposed to be the leader of a girl's gang and a smoker to boot, but this never made canon. Now, this did not appear in a single issue of Sailor V, nor in a single issue or animation frame of Bishoujo Senshi Sailor Moon. Furthermore, I had done some research and found out when Giles pulls out a Zatoichi and holds it to Xander's throat, that would be impossible, because Zatoichi was a fictitious character, a blind swordsman, and not the name of a sword. Only plebeians would refer to the Zatoichi as a sword, for the true name of the sword cane is referred to as the Shikomishu. Now, perhaps Fallen Druid was attempting to appeal to the plebeians. I can understand this. I do this on a daily basis. So he wanted to make it in terms that they would simply understand. However, in realizing that I had made a mistake last episode, I was in fact mistaken. Now, the quote by Yusuf Kosh, who says, "Character like a photograph develops in darkness." Certainly I feel that applies to our story, On Dark Wings and Dark Nights, by Damian Nathaniel Wren. Enjoy. Pretentious Internet Theater presents On Dark Wings and Dark Nights, written by Damian Nathaniel Wren, hosted on fanfiction.net. Chapter 1. Contrition. Batman's eyes narrowed as he stared at the bank of monitors used by the Batcomputer. One notice in particular from the GCPD caught his attention. Joker had escaped from Arkham. Batman took long strides, heading towards the Batmobile, thinking where Joker might go. The clown prince of crime always had a love for old toy factories. Or perhaps costume and magic shops. But he exhausted most of them in Gotham and wasn't one to repeat himself. No. This time, he'd have to do something different. Something unusual. As Batman jumped into his car, Alfred, who was in the process of serving Bruce's evening meal, piped up, "I take it you'll be dining takeout this evening." Batman let out a chuckle and said, "I'll be back by morning," before closing the top. Alfred watched the Batmobile's jet turbine engine whine to life, flames occasionally leaping from the various ports which vectored its thrust and provided the Batmobile with almost unnaturally tight handling at high speeds. Within moments, the vehicle's exhaust vents moved in synchronous union as the vehicle sprung to life. "So I'll be taking you wanting your usual breakfast of leftovers and bandages, then." His words fell on no ears but his own, however. The Batman was long gone. Batman shifted the Batmobile into its highest gear as he continued winding his way through the mountain roads through Gotham. "Computer, analyze recent police broadcasts and triangulate Joker's position." A confirmation tone played, followed by the computer's voice.
"Triangulation complete."
Showed a satellite view of the coordinates on screen. Maximum magnification. Portion of the Batmobile's windshield went up as the heads-up display showed Joker heading towards a familiar back alley. "Close view," Batman commanded, and slammed the accelerator to the floor. Two words escaped his lips. "Axis Chemical." Joker ran madly, Dodging another police cruiser and hiding behind a dumpster, once clear, he continued his escapes, straps and sleeve flying as he can. Convinced he was safe now, he stopped to catch his breath, sitting on a nearby milk crate. Hunched over, he placed his arms on his knees and crossed his sleeve before him, talking to himself. First, catch my breath, then ditch the jacket. Keep it. It suits you. Joker looked up to see Batman, and down to where the Batman's foot had already trapped his sleeves onto the floor. Eyes wide, he looked up just in time to see the oncoming leather-gloved fist. Whap! Joker reeled back, his sleeves tearing from the force of the blow, and slammed against the wall. Batman wasted no time following up as he used his forearm to pin Joker to the wall by his neck. Joker cackled. Just like old times, isn't it, Drac? You, me, and a family-sized vat of toxic waste. The leather in Batman's gauntlets creaked as he pressed harder against Joker's neck. Oh, come now. Don't tell me you've already forgotten our first date. Face it, Bats, you made me. If it wasn't for you, we wouldn't even be dancing our precarious little dance. But then, think of all the fun we had together. The gacks, the beatings. Joker paused, cracking a demented smile. His voice lowered as he continued, taunting now. The neurologically impaired sidekicks. Batman picked up Joker by the collar and threw him against the opposite wall of the alley, garbage cans flying as a stray cat screeched his complaint. Batman again pinned Joker before he had the chance to recover, blood now trickling down the Joker's forehead from the corner of his mouth. Joker had suffered an internal injury, a damaged lung. You made me first, Joker. Or should I say, Red Hood?
Red Hood, Schmed Hood, who cares? Joker is your doing, your very demented work of procreation art. Face it, Drac, I'm the closest thing you have to family. Flesh and blood, your own little Bats in the Belfry, Jr.
Batman slammed a fist into Joker's gut with everything he had, the clown coughing up blood in response. Joker looked up again at Batman, his eyes lighting up as his lips curled back to reveal his yellow crooked teeth and unnaturally wide grin.
Ha ha ha! Keep this up and you'll be fighting for top bunk at Blackgate! That's assuming they don't decide to lock you up in Arkham with me. Just imagine the headlines now. Winged freak committed to Gotham on charges of criminal child abuse. That would be quite the punchline, wouldn't it, Daddy?
Bruce Wayne shot up in bed. His covers a tangled mess on the floor. He was soaked with sweat, his limbs trembling. His heart beat painfully as if attempting to leap from his chest. Head aching, he turned to the nightstand and poured a fresh glass of water, the image of Joker still fresh in his mind as he drank. He put his hand to his forehead and began breathing deeply, whispering to himself,
Nightmare. Too real.
He looked at the clock. 3:33 a.m. It had long since become a rare occasion he could sleep during the Gotham nights, and it seemed tonight would be no exception. Still groggy, he headed down to the Batcave to train, thoughts turning to apparently apprehended Mad Hatter, who had broken out of Arkham a week earlier and returned 3 days ago with no apparent sign of criminal activity, no burglaries, no kidnappings, no reports of bizarre animal behavior. Tetch didn't even have a single one of his trademark white cards marked with a 10-6 on them.
What could he have been up to?
Bruce murmured. Master Bruce. Alfred greeted Bruce as he entered the Batcave, now fully awake. He had changed into a pair of sweatpants before coming down, while neglecting to accompany them with a t-shirt. He also grabbed a towel.
I take it you've been informed of the Joker's escape from Arkham.
No, Alfred, I haven't. When was it discovered?
A few moments ago at 3:33 a.m.
Coordinate reports on the Gotham City's police band. Triangulate Joker's most probable whereabouts. Then verify via satellite. I'm going to change.
Yes, Master Bruce.
Under 2 minutes had passed before Bruce Wayne reemerged as Batman, walking in long, steady strides towards the Batmobile.
Find anything, Alfred?
Yes, sir. It would appear that Joker's currently heading towards Access Chemical. What the devil could he be looking for in an abandoned chemical plant?
Batman wasted no words in his reply.
A reckoning.
Jumping into the Batmobile, he made a quick system check before closing the top. The vehicle's vector thrust system was now aiming rearward. The jet turbine switched from its chill, pre-ignition whine to a full roar as Batman hit the accelerator and, seconds later, was gone. Alfred set out fresh clothes and a newly apprenticed first aid kit for Bruce's return before ascending the staircase that led into the mansion. Struck again by the stark contrast between the sparse, Otarian Batcave below and the plush opulence of the Palisades above, the preparation of Bruce's morning meal, Alfred decided, wait until his return. Drops of rain occasionally splashed onto Batman's optics as he searched the area around him. Morning was approaching. Gotham's sunrise would be in an hour, and a dark night wanted this over with.
His foe tonight was Joker, wildly unpredictable and highly athletic. Apprehending him was never that simple. Looking down into the alleyway, a mere block away from Axis Chemical, Batman smarted his quarry. He took aim, fired his repeller, and with nothing more than a gentle rustle of his cape in the wind, took his place and waited. Joker's bare feet slapped their way through the newly formed puddles, as his red eyes flashed wildly about him. The Gotham Police Department was somehow still frighteningly close, and annoyingly zealous in their pursuit. He had managed to shed his Arkham Asylum chic, however, and returned to more torn sleeve straight jackets and pairs of purple pants he kept hidden around the city for just such occasion. Taking care to remain hidden, Joker peeked into the surrounding street, dashing madly across to the next alleyway once clear. He was almost there. Almost there when a strange feeling as if something were tugging at his back overcame him. Joker stopped, his eyes alight as he revealed his crooked yellow grin. He stood erect, poised, as if delivering a line from Shakespeare.
"Suspicions among the thoughts are like said bats wheeling about the steeple of my..."
Batman broke his glide, slamming himself into Joker with ferocious intensity and interrupting his monologue. Joker's expression lay unperturbed as he spoke.
"Hello, Drac. Miss me?"
Joker slipped a foot under Batman's waist and kicked hard, sending him flying, before running again towards Axis Chemical and cackling wildly.
"Last one in's a rotten egg!"
Batman rubbed his head. Joker had slammed into the wall, but good, leaving him a little dizzy. "No time for this," he said and jumped up, chasing Joker. He fired his repeller and took an alternate way from the upper floors as Joker pried a few boards from an otherwise open window. Joker lifted his arm to reveal a playing card as he stepped his way stealthily, slowly, towards Axis Chemical, his blood-soaked eyes ticking in every possible detail. Joker stopped, smiled, and nodded before continuing. Then again, Batman's eyes narrow.
"Twinkle, twinkle, little bat," Joker recited. "How I wonder where you're at."
Batman swung down on his line, sending Joker flying with a kick to the chest. He slammed into one of the abandoned wooden crates in the plant, crushing it.
"You've been spending too much time swapping stories with Jervis Tetch, Joker. Give up. I'm taking you back to Arkham."
Joker broke into an uproarious laughter as he tossed his playing card upward. Burst into a brilliant flame like a flare, illuminating the entire factory. Joker had set a trap and sprung it expertly, uttering two words,
"Get him!"
Batman was surrounded, a number of large men wielding sledgehammers and wearing a variety of hats, all with a card marked 10-6 thrust into their headband. He glared at Joker, still watching as his attackers jockeyed for an advantage position. Batman didn't wait, slamming his fist into the gut of his closest attacker and removing the Mad Hatter's trademark as he threw the man into another attacker, dodging a blow from the sledgehammer. Batman rolled into two bodies lying on the floor, removing and crushing the second card. Four more attackers to go, Joker took flight, cackling all the way.
"Don't play nice, kiddies!"
His voice suddenly turned sharp.
"And remember, Santa's watching!"
Batman crossed his arms, blocking an overhead attack and grabbing the offending hammer by the neck. He quickly kicked his attacker, sending him reeling. Turning, he held up the hammer as if to block another blow, allowing his new attacker to break it in two, rendering the head useless. Spinning quickly, he slammed the staff into his attacker's stomach, bending him over, before grabbing and crushing his card underfoot. Third man fell, a dazed look in his eye. Three to go. Worrying about quickly, he reestablished his bearings, watching as two of the three remaining attackers ran at him with hammers high. The bat dropped a smoke pellet, firing his repeller into the ceiling. The two swung, crushing each other's mind control cards on impact. Batman swung down to the final participant in the ambush, thankful for the way the Mad Hatter's mind control enhanced one's strength and resisted the damage. Batman grabbed the man by the collar, quickly noticing the card had fallen to the floor. He was breathing erratically and sobbing as the scent of urine began tinging the air. Batman released him, setting him to one side before stomping on the final card.
"Where's Joker?"
I don't know. Last time I remember, I was at home, using my computer. Next thing I know, I'm here, and you're mopping the floor with me. What am I even doing in Gotham City?"
Batman's eyes widened.
"So that's how."
He trailed off, shoving his would-be attacker in one direction and dodging in another. One of Joker's deadly cards slammed into a crate, exploding it.
"Tag, Betsy! You're it!"
Batman fired his repeller, quickly raising himself into the catwalk in pursuit.
"Run, run, as fast as you can!
You can't catch me, I'm the Joker Man!"
Joker took off, jumping from surface to surface, vat to vat, as he began his almost ape-like escape. Batman looked, seeing where he was headed next. The whole structure was supported by ropes Batman cut via Batarang. He leapt, slamming headlong into the Joker. He only fell to have them splash unexpectedly into a large pool of water. Joker grinned as he came to the surface, amused by himself, rubbing his face vigorously on his sleeve before speaking.
Imagine that! Makeup won't smudge, run, or fade away! It's Permaclown!
Joker took off before swimming towards the edge, while Batman again fired his repeller. Joker escaped the reservoir. Batman swung onto him, knocking him down. It was right then they noticed something was different.
Isn't that something?
Joker asked.
Didn't feel a thing.
Joker rolled backwards, throwing Batman at least 20 feet when he landed in a sickening crack. Batman stood up, holding his ribcage, and let out a cough, blood smattering the floor as he rose. Joker looked down at his hands.
Don't remember being able to do that before.
And with a shrug, he took off a sense of heroic leaps, leaping to the top of the plant and out in the skylight. Batman looked around. Joker had won. For now. This was no longer the abandoned access chemical. In fact, this plant, although similar, was very much like an active one that appeared dedicated to purifying, carbonizing, and bottling water to sell to the masses. His eyes caught several pallet of boxes near a forklift, ready for loading. Placing one hand on a box, he read aloud,
"Cuckoo fizzy water."
He aimed his repeller at Joker's exit point and fired, lifting himself up and out of the balcony. He activated the remote on his belt to call the Batmobile. No reply. He repeated the instruction, then got the same. Now standing atop the Cuckoo fizzy water plant, he stared out at the landscape unfolding before him. The similar skyscrapers, towers, and streets that made up Gotham City had been replaced by something far more alien. A single set of flatly colored buildings spiraled upwards from the city's heart and reached impossibly high, all surrounded by an enormous sprawl of lower-lying buildings stretching onto the horizon. Opposite that was a great body of water the likes of Gotham Bay, a dark, majestic suspension bridge arcing its way high over the surface to a destination unknown. Batman shook his head slowly, speaking quietly to himself.
What are you up to this time?
Speaking authoritatively, now he called for Alfred. No response.
Looks like I'm on my own.
Chapter 2. Convergence. Batman descended to the city streets, taking care to remain hidden in the shadows. Continuing his way through the city, searching for a place to sleep, he was unable to ignore the populace running about the streets below.
Furries?
Batman continued to be astounded by the plethora of humanoid animals that filled the city around him. Though it seemed for the most part to be a population of ducks, he noted bears, bold dogs, and even goats going about their day-to-day lives in a manner no different to the human population of Gotham. In fact, that was perhaps his most disturbing observation. There were no other humans here at all. Spotting an abandoned warehouse, Batman found his way in and verified it was empty. He tucked himself away. Not before finding an old newspaper in one of its former offices.
St. Gennard Guardian, he mused.
Tired, hidden and satisfied with finding at least some concept of where he was, Batman resigned himself to sleep. He would deal with Batmite in the evening. Stubbs was a Rottweiler Pitbull mix and the leader of his gang. Inspired by old movies, they called themselves the Canine Noir. Hung out in the back rooms of derelict restaurant near the docks of St. Gennard, Tiny, an English Mastiff, was dealing. Tiny opened conversation as he began distributing cards. His voice was deep, and his speech slightly slurred as he'd been fighting too long in the streets of Brooklyn.
Hey, yo, you hear about the fight last night between David Dane and Mike Bison?
Yeah, yeah,
Miffy, a German terror, came back, his voice high-pitched.
Didn't Bison take him out in 3 rounds?
Miffy raised his small black body onto his chair and began throwing punches, shifting his feet around.
I heard it was like BAM! And Dane was all dizzy, and Bison came back with a POW! And Dane was all oof and junk!
Hey, Stubbs interrupted, irritated. Will you sit down and get your mind in the game? We got gambling to do. 5-card stud, gentlemen, and I use the term loosely. Ace is high,
and Joker's wild!
A voice came from out of nowhere, echoing through the building and interrupting Stubbs' mid-sentence. The Canine Noir looked around. Stubbs picked up the Tommy gun by his chair. Tiny nodded to the others, who drew their respective pistols from their coats as Tiny himself took his own Tommy gun out of a violin case. Stubbs was the first to challenge the voice. Who's there? Smashing of glass overhead was soon followed by the sound thump of Joker's feet as he landed squarely on the poker table in front of Stubbs. Reaching out, Joker grabbed Stubbs by the collar, snatched him nose to nose, grinning madly as he introduced himself.
Joker!
Tiny lowered his Tommy gun as Miffy sank in his chair. The remaining members of the gang followed suit, looking panicked. Stubbs continued speaking, saying what everyone else was thinking anyways.
You want a Quackerjacks, guys, ain't ya? Tell you what, Mr. Joker, you can have this place as long as you need it.
The remaining members of the Canine Noir needed no further confirmation. They immediately scrambled, deserting their boss.
We'll just be getting on our way, as you can make yourselves at home. Joker leaned back, his expression a bit more serious now. He let Stubbs go, dropping him. Stubbs hit the ground running. Moments later, Joker was alone in his new hideout with time enough to think and rest up for the next battle with the bat. One thought, now in particular, titillated his soul. His curiosity was going to get the best of him. Plopping down cross-legged in the center of the poker table, Joker asked,
"Now who's this Quackerjack?"
Before exhaustion and sleep overtook him. The answer would have to wait until evening. "Bruce! Bruce!" Vicky first tapped Bruce on the shoulder, then shook him hard. Her contractions were getting intense now and her water broke. She needed to get to Gotham Central, stat. Bruce turned over to face his wife as he lazily opened his eyes. "What's wrong? Don't tell me." Bruce realized immediately what was happening. Jumped out of bed and dressed himself quickly, quietly, with all the calm of a sleeping newborn, then gathered Vicky's things. Alfred assisted with a few last-minute details and had the Rolls-Royce parked out front. After loading the trunk, Bruce helped Vicky into the car and got in himself as Alfred took off towards the hospital. Vicky's own screams or complaint were in stark contrast to the unnatural cool which the two men responded to the emergency, almost as if they did this every day. Alfred wasn't even breaking the speed limit. Plenty of time to spare, Alfred pulled up to the entrance of Gotham General's emergency department, assisting with baggage while Bruce walked Vicky inside and assisted with her triage. Before anyone knew anything else, Vicky was in delivery with her legs in stirrups, surrounded by medical staff. "The baby's crowning! Okay, push! Push!" The doctor guided Vicky through the child's birth as Bruce stood there beside his wife, who, coincidentally, was squeezing the daylight out of his hand and threatening with various creative forms of bloody, painful retribution if he ever so much as touched her again. The doctor gently took hold of the child, assisting now. "Okay, we just have to get past the shoulders," and the delivery room burst into applause. One nurse cleaning the child as another cut the umbilical cord. The doctor examined the child closely, relieved when it started to cry. The doctor smiled gently when she carried the child into his mother's arms, presenting it to Vicky as she spoke gently. "Congratulations. It's a boy." Bruce chuckled inwardly as he caught his wife quickly counting fingers and toes before the child's greenish stringing hair and white chalky skin took his attention. He leaned in closer as the child's eyes snapped open, eyes taking an appearance of a set of cloudy blood-red marbles. Batman awoke, taking in his surroundings. His stomach grumbled a complaint which he ignored. Food he could do without. Water was a different story. If the water in the bay was anything like Gotham's, it was far from safe to drink, and in this universe or whatever, walking into a local grocery store and using their water fountain wasn't so viable an option. In a world completely devoid of humans, anything he did in the public eye, in costume or out, was going to attract copious amounts of attention. That he couldn't have. He decided to hope for a public source in the park, somewhere that he could raid. That's if he didn't want to steal anything. Even if the cost was negligible to them, he preferred public fountains to those at the Cuckoo Fizzy Water where he emerged. But if necessary to survive, Batman arose slowly, carefully, noiselessly. He walked beneath the skylight and fired his repeller, taking a short way up. The cooling breeze blew as Batman surveyed the city around him. Spotting a fire at the docks, he tapped his earpiece and felt somewhat relieved. At least he could turn to St. Canard's emergency band. Batman could hear the alarm go off at the dock at the same time reports concerning run-amok destructive toys began crisscrossing the radio waves, a crime that sounded curiously like Joker's M.O. This was worth checking out. Tightly clenched fists slammed into the boardroom's mahogany table, its force not the least bit negated by the orange sleeve with the red polka dots it extended from, Quackerjack glared intensely at the remainder of the board, letting his anger sink in for a moment before speaking. "I want to make this very clear! I could care less about the current sales of this... Whittle boy, it can't last! My toys have been the staple of childhood in St. Canard for generations!" Crackerjack's idol subsided a bit, disgust more apparent in its tone. "This Twinkle boy will be gone before we know it. Sales will continue, prove as is usual." Crackerjack took a deep breath, calming himself. "Now, we can get to the point of things. I'd like to discuss the import and sale of our special toy line. I want numbers, demographic, and distribution maps. I also want a progress report on the filming of our new commercial, along with the projected effectiveness of the overlaid ultrasonic transmissions." Crackerjack stared out at the individual sitting before him, all of whom still sat sun from his earlier outburst.
QJ rolled his eyes before projecting his voice and assuming a much angrier stance. Now, maggots! Several members of the board began digging through their attaché cases for documentation containing the requested information. Several others excused themselves briefly, and one made a panicked phone call. QJ continued speaking. My new special line of toys are in every home, every office building in St. Canard. In 1 week's time, I will drag a burning smile across the face of St. Canard. The boardroom promptly filled with laughter, deep, raucous, maniacal, unsettling laugh that surrounded them, echoing from every surface of the room as it assaulted their ears. Clackerjack glared angrily, wondering who had the nerve to interrupt him, stealing his own opportunity to laugh. He leaned forward onto the table, screaming, Whose idea of a joke is this? The laughter stopped immediately. Joker's voice giving reply, Not joke. Clacking sound could be heard coming from the ceiling, a vent cover crashing to the floor. Joker's form flopped, landing heavily on its feet into a crouch where he'd stand face to face with a jester. He threw his arms wide in introduction. Joker! Joker moved his face in closer, twisting its head sideways a bit until he was nose to beak with Crackerjack. Pleasure to meet you, Jackie. Sounds like my kind of party. Crackerjack laughed. What are you? Hey, who shaved the tailless monkey? It's a riot! Joker turned dark, interrupting QJ, and grabbing him by the collar as he displayed his wide yellow grin. Seems you and I need to chat. Crackerjack looked past Joker and waved away the other occupants of the room. With Teddy standing innocuously in the corner of the room, QJ sat in his chair and stared into Joker's grin, producing an equally wide grin of pearly white. I'm listening. Batman landed on the warehouse roof. Looking down at the mayhem below, a baby with a buzzsaw from his torso ran around literally trying to hug everyone and everything I got close to. A toy pedal-powered tank, large enough for a small child to sit in and drive, was lighting sacks of crates on fire with his flamethrower. Several realistic model toy aircraft screamed by its head with dramatic arch, dropping bombs containing tear gas on fleeting dock workers. He increased magnification. Again examining the site.
No sign of Joker.
Batman leapt from the roof, his cape once more transforming into the glider. With expert timing, he broke his glide, landing squarely on top of the toy tank, crushing it. His gloved hands reached down and grabbed the barrel of the flamethrower before Batman wrenched back with everything he had, twisting it. It was then that a large motorcycle screamed in the far corner of the warehouse, breaking onto the scene. A white duck, dressed like a refugee from the shadows, sneered as he piloted his bike. The sidecar contained a much younger, unmasked female with red hair, wearing a purple sports jersey and grinning maniacally while wielding some kind of gun, which he fired at the various toys which were scampling about, causing mayhem.
Eat glue, you evil demonic toy thingies!
The grenades fired from the gun's barrel struck the toys and staring them in a web of sticky glue. Within moments, the aircraft were down, and the buzzsaw baby had been brought to a standstill along with various other toys gone wackadoo. A jet, shaped like a duck's head, screamed overhead, dropping fire-retardant foam on the flames. Despite the occasional glue-covered dark worker, and a few small flames being put out by a duck wearing a bomber jacket and wielding a fire extinguisher, the mess was quickly under control, Batman deciding to retreat back to the rooftops. St. Canard had its own hero. He was free to concentrate on his own problems. For now, that suited him just fine. Batman hadn't gone far before spotting the motorcycle from earlier on the roof with him.
What the?
Batman whirled around, searching for a way the motorcycle could get there, but finding none when a large puff of purple smoke caught his attention. The smoke dissipated, revealing the motorcycle's purple-clad pilot, cape held open with an attempt to appear menacing.
I am the terror that flaps in the night. I am the special news bulletin that interrupts your favorite show. I...
Batman rolled his eyes.
You've got to be kidding me.
Am Darkwing Duck!
Without warning, the glue grenade hit Batman, entangling his lower half in glue. He began to struggle against it, but relaxed, realizing the glue had no real hold over him. Within moments, Darkwing, the young girl, and the duck in the bomber jacket were surrounding him, talking. Darkwing opened the conversation.
Yep.
That's the result of brilliant planning for you. Crack execution by my expert team.
The young girl spoke next, her voice exploding with enthusiasm.
Hey, Dad, what are we going to do with him? We don't even know who he is.
Yeah, chimed in the duck wearing the bomber jacket. He looks like a refugee from Morgana's castle. He laughed. Not like he gets bats very often here in St. Canard. Better make sure he's not family.
Yeah, Dad, the girl interrupted. Otherwise, Morgana's going to get pretty angry.
DW circled Batman slowly, taking in the details.
Quiet, Gothelin. I have everything under control.
Batman smirked.
so then maybe you can tell me where Joker is.
D.W. took a dramatic stance. I knew it! Joker! That sounds like one of Quackerjack's men! What do you have to do with Quackerjack? D.W. leapt up, grabbing Batman's cape for leverage in an attempt to make his 4-foot height more intimidating. What's he up to? Batman tore an arm free, yanking D.W. off of him, noting a particular squeaking sound before holding him by the neck.
How should I know?
Goslin's eyes got big. Cool! He could break free of Dad's glue bomb! Goslin! D.W. objected. Not now! D.W. turned his attention to Batman, voice quacking. So? I take you're not working with Quackerjack, then? Batman dropped the duck.
No, and I have no idea who Morgana is, either.
Batman took a step forward, easily tearing free of the glue before continuing.
Who's Quackerjack?
D.W. gulped, stepping away the ominous figure as Goslin began searching for a solution as Launchpad stated the obvious. Uh-oh, D.W., I think you made him angry. Darkwing continued his march backwards.
Really? Couldn't tell. Hey, Dad, catch!
Goslin threw one of D.W.'s gas guns to him from the rat catcher. Batman intercepted it, breaking it into two parts and dropping it on the ground between them.
I don't have all night.
Batman leaned over until he was nose to beak with D.W.
Who's Quackerjack?
D.W. started shaking as Goslin and Launchpad stood helpless.
He's a local toy maker. He runs Quackerjack Toys in Tint Canard. It's a legitimate business, but it acts like a cover for Quackerjack's criminal operations. He has ties to the local mafia.
Batman stood up, looking pensive.
Toy maker, huh?
Batman looked down at D.W., now rubbing his arse after a fall.
Listen up. We're all on the same side here.
Batman pulled a small candy bar-like cell phone from his utility belt.
I'm looking for a clown. He's dangerous. If you see someone new around here with a toy fetish, call me. I'm gonna check out Quackerjack.
Hey, Dad, what's a fetish?
Goslin asked. And with that, Batman leapt over to the side of the building. Goslin immediately went off, talking about how cool the bat was, while Launchpad peered over the side of the building in an attempt to see where he went.
Whoa, D.W., he's gone!
D.W. stared at the small black communicator for a moment, thinking to himself, before answering,
probably for the better.
Putting the communicator away, D.W. headed for the rat catcher, Goslin following suit as Launchpad called the Thunderquack. D.W. stared at the rat catcher before continuing,
we've got to figure out what Quackerjack's up to. Let's go.
But, Dad!
Goslin whined. Darkwing snapped Goslin's eyes and he looked.
I said let's go!
Goslin crossed her arms and looked angrily, barely speaking under her breath.
I wanted to go home and play the new Wiffle Boy game anyways.
Chapter 3. Vicissitude. What do you mean they won't air my commercial?
Mr. Milky Milktoast, accountant-turned-advertising executive and placed in charge of the portion of Cracker Jack's pet project, stumbled backwards.
They...
He caught himself stammering and gulped loudly.
They have another event that's going to be showing uninterrupted that evening. I believe it's the telethon for Mary's kids.
Quackerjack looked suddenly pensive.
Oh yeah, they do that every year around this time, don't they?
Milktoast looked relieved, his shoulder pads on his cheap, crumpled, out-of-date suit dropping in response. He let out a sigh.
Yes, sir. Every year. Your plans just so happen to...
Have them cancel the telethon!
Quackerjack interrupted. Teddy, sensing QJ's perturbed state, now stood behind QJ, with his eyes glowing red. Put up a cottony paw and grinned as a series of five small, curved, black knives began to slowly extend from to serve his claws. Joker, sitting at the opposite end of the boardroom, filing his nails, let out a chuckle. Milktoast stood up from his diminutive height at Quackerjack, wide eyes.
Cancel?
Cancel! Do you know how much Quackerjack Toys gives to Mary's kids yearly?
Sir, it's not like they can...
Quackerjack slammed Milktoast's head against the rich mahogany table, silencing him. Milktoast's eyes became swirls as he stumbled about, barely staying on his feet. Quackerjack, taking on a surprisingly high-handed aristocratic mien, then turned to Teddy.
Take out the trash, will you, dear boy? That's a good chap.
Teddy smiled a surprisingly and disturbingly toothy grin, each jagged tooth razor-sharp with rows of visible teeth behind them, as if his mouths were a shark's. He extended his claws fully, including a blade that extended the full 3 feet from his palm, thrust him in the Milktoast's stumbling form. Milktoast immediately doubled over, shuddering. He looked up at Teddy, then at Quackerjack, his eyes pleading. As Teddy raised his other paw, however, Milktoast realized it was far too late. Life for Milktoast took on a surreal reality. Everything slowed into some sort of perversely beautiful ballet as Teddy spun him around the wall of glass overlooking St. Canard. Milktoast even admired the precision rifling he noticed from the 50mm gun installed in Teddy's other paw. He took pleasure in the light scent of gun oil that wafted gently across his nose. Then came the bright flash of light, before his head, his body soaring, then twisting, then breaking as it slammed beautifully through the building's structural glass. That was when he lost what remained of his consciousness, his lifeless body smashing itself on the streets below as Joker looked down from the shattered window, laughing hysterically. Crackerjack picked up his phone. Dialed Building Maintenance.
Yes, this is Crackerjack. Seems we have some broken glass up here in the boardroom and a window that needs to be replaced. Also, get someone to clean up Avenue 2, okay? Bye-bye.
Teddy reached down with his claws and picked up a bit of milquetoast torn suit that was left behind and used it to clean his blade. Examining it curiously, innocently, he satisfied himself that it was clean and retracted it with his other weapon before tossing the cloth aside. That done, Teddy retired to his corner, flopping lifelessly down as if he were a true, oversized, stuffed teddy bear before switching off.
Now what am I supposed to do? Lamented Crackerjack. He flopped down in his plush, oversized leather chair and stared absentmindedly into nothing.
Joker walked from the window to Crackerjack's side, whispering in his ear.
Looks like you're going to have to go with Plan B.
Crackerjack turned to Joker, now agitated and whiny.
I didn't even design a Plan B. My plan was perfect. I didn't even need a Plan B.
Joker stood upright, taking a step back.
Jackie, 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 he sighed. Look, there's more than one way to skin a bat. It's easy enough to think of something.
Joker suddenly smacked the dejected-looking Crackerjack, spinning him in his chair, before grabbing QJ by the collar and pulling him close.
All you have to do is put your mind to it.
Joker released Crackerjack, who flopped back down in his chair.
All right, Mr. Smarty Pants, what have you come up with?
Joker did a backflip and landed by the shattered window, bowing graciously, then waited a moment for Crackerjack to come share the view as Joker pointed out towards Audubon Bay.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you...
Dramatic pause.
The St. Canard Opera House.
And so, our hero retires to Audubon Bay Bridge, where he analyzes the evidence, applying his incredible powers of intellect and deduction to anticipate his enemy's next move.
Darkwing paced the floor, deep in thought, with one hand behind his back and the other his finger curled beneath his chin. He glanced occasionally at the doll they had taken from the crime scene, wondering what it meant. Finally, he stopped pacing, taking up the doll.
Hey, Launchpad!
Darkwing threw a doll at the unsuspecting pilot. Launchpad looked down at the doll, then at DW, as began wiping grease off himself and from Thunderquack.
Find out what you can about this, will you?
Sure thing, DW.
Launchpad grabbed his tools and the doll, immediately set to work.
Ah, come on, this boss is taking forever!
Goslin threw down the game controller in frustration. Honker picked up the control after her and adjusted his glasses.
Actually, Goslin, if you adjust the yellow wiffle armor after you enter the arena, you should be able to deflect his green energy blast using the accompanying yellow bat. Once you have that ability...
Goslin stood up, her eyes narrowing as he snatched the controller away from Honker. Goslin watched the level's boss, known as the Green Ring, explode outward in a series of small circular bursts, and a victorious tune played over the speakers before the screen proudly displayed, "A winner is you." Goslin looked at Honker, disdain in their voice.
Show off.
Hey!
Suddenly Launchpad stepped back from where he was working, stunned.
Whoa, 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 whoa!
He took off, dodging the buzzsaw's wielding doll as he repeated the word mama and tried to hug him.
I'm not your mama, Launchpad yelled.
Goslin, smashing the doll on the head with a hockey stick, the doll turned to face her, its face half crushed and falling apart.
Mama!
It said, its buzzsaw whirring back up to speed. Goslin jumped up, giving the doll another whack. Its head spun around once more before an eye popped out, and its arm fell off at the shoulder. Its buzzsaw stopped spinning.
Mama!
It said, falling to the floor with a thud. Goslin gave it another whack for good measure.
Looks like your hugging days are over.
Darkwing walked over, examining the scene.
He rubbed his chin. I wonder what set it off.
Launchpad let out a hearty, thanks, Gos, before asking if it was safe to come down. Honker came over to make his own observations.
Mr. Darkwing, now that Goslin has split open the doll's head, I can see the two physioelectric circuits.
Honker walked over to the doll, demonstrating their locations.
One's here, and another one's here.
Honker carefully picked up the doll and showed it the back of the neck.
And if you look here, you'll see one of the circuits was used as the emitter.
Darkwing stared intently, hanging on to Honker's every word. He raised an eyebrow before responding.
In English, Honker.
I think the Dauntless activated by the sound it hears over this microphone and replays using the speaker in the back of the neck to search for as many toys as possible.
Darkwing slapped his fist in his hand. In other words, Quackerjack has built an entire army of these things which he plans to use to take over Think Canard.
That's great, DW, Launchpad joined in. But what's setting them off?
What do you mean the Wiffle Boy video game is setting off my toys? How is that happening?
Taffy, having long since noticed the breeze coming from the out-of-doors, noted a broken pane of glass in the boardroom and connected it with Milktoast's disappearance. This was the worst possible time to be the bearer of bad news. And she was elected. Taffy took a deep breath.
There have been two separate instances now where your toys have been set off prematurely. One was handled by the St. Canard Release Department, while the other instance was handled by Darkwing Duck and what some reports are saying is an unknown but exceptionally large bat.
Joker perked up, listening much more intensively now. Crackerjack took a deep breath, highly annoyed.
That still doesn't explain the connection to the Wiffle Boy game.
Taffy continued. In both incidents, someone was playing the Wiffle Boy game within audible range of your toy line. To be specific, the toy attacks all started when the victory sequence of the character versus the Green Ring. Apparently, somehow, by coincidence, Crackerjack held his forehead, then began massaging his temples as he listened, pushing his fingers into his closed eyes as he completed their explanation of the last few evening's events, including the involvement of both Darkwing Duck and this Batman the Joker had warned him about.
How are the two of them possibly teamed up already?
Crackerjack asked.
I told you he worked fast, Joker replied.
Crackerjack took a small, banana-headed doll from his shoulder and turned it to face him. He inserted fingers into the strategically hidden places, taking control of the ventriloquist dummy before speaking to it in a high-pitched voice.
Looks like you may need to step up your plans, Mr. Crackerjack.
Crackerjack slumped in his chair as he answered the doll in his own voice.
No kidding, Mr. Banana Brain.
QJ turned to Taffy, who was still standing there awaiting instruction. He questioned her.
Well?
Taffy turned to Crackerjack and tried hard to decode his expression, while glancing nervously at the broken window. He'd been through such a wild range of emotions lately, like she had no idea what to make of it at all. She could only hope she hadn't misstepped.
Get out!
Yes, Mr. Crackerjack, she said, and walked briskly out of the boardroom's double doors. Crackerjack looked at Joker, who sat, shaking his head.
You know, Jackie, it really is just a question of time now. Come on, it's now or never. Do or die! Grab a few henchmen and... quick, smash and grab, and then Calisto divide and joy the St. Canard Opera House. Thou... what do you say, Jackie boy?
Crackerjack smiled big before letting out his characteristic laugh.
It's playtime!
Joker grinned, his red eyes almost sparkling as he chuckled. He spoke to himself quietly.
That's just what I wanted to hear.
And with that, our episode draws to a close. Just a reminder, you can email us at pretentiousinternettheater@gmail.com. Next episode, we bring you the exciting conclusion to On Dark Wings and Dark Nights by Damian Nathaniel Wren. And of course, as always, there is much drama on the internet, but only the best makes pretentious internet theater. Good night, and the pleasure is all yours.